isn't he?
An interview with Robert Sess at the Light Engineering Building in his office Thursday, September 21st. The questions are just to get the background of each individual.
Okay.
So you want to let me have it?
Okay. Number one, my name is Robert Sess. I'm split between the Mechanical Engineering Department and the Institute for Atmospheric Sciences, and my formal title is Leading Professor of Atmospheric Sciences.
Leading Professor. LEAD?
Yes.
Atmospheric Sciences. Is the Atmospheric Sciences up in Albany or near Albany?
Well, no, we're totally separate from that. We have an Institute for Atmospheric Sciences, which encompasses three separate departments.
I see.
On this campus.
All right, let me have that one just briefly. Who are they? Which departments?
All right, the Mechanical Engineering Department, Earth and Space Sciences Department, and the Department of Physics.
Department of Physics.
All right, what year? I arrived at Stony Brook, July 1961. 28 years old. I came from North Carolina State University. I was an associate professor. Tom Irvine was primarily responsible for my coming to Stony Brook. I was interviewed by Tom Irvine and John Lee. Why did I come? I don't really remember now. That was a long time ago. My understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook was to be a first-class state university. My impressions of Stony Brook when I first came, it was absolutely chaotic. It was a temporary campus in Oyster Bay. My office was in part of a former servant's quarters that was attached to a large garage that was the first engineering lab.
That was the first engineering lab?
That was the first engineering laboratory.
Speak a little more slowly and a little louder so that I get
sure.
It on here.
The laboratory facility was a converted garage at Oyster Bay. Shortly after I came, one of the people who had recruited me, John Lee, who was president, was fired as president. The future of the whole institution seemed to be somewhat shaky at that time. The following year, the campus was shifted to Stony Brook, and my first office was in the Humanities Building in a group of offices adjacent to Anthropology. The man in the next office from me was a professor of Anthropology.
Who was he?
I'm trying to remember now.
Lufarn? Lufarn?
No. He left many years ago. Benjamin, first name was Benjamin, that's as far as my memory banks. Well, I don't recall. And the engineering labs were over in old chemistry room. Then the following year we moved into old engineering. About 3 years later, my office shifted to Light Engineering, a year later to Heavy Engineering, and then perhaps a decade later back to this office in Light Engineering.
Did you have anything to do with the design of old engineering?
I had no. I'm not a laboratory person, so I had no input into any of the laboratory designs at all. What events, what persons, what experiences stand out in your mind? Oh, Lord. This is a 28-year span.
Right.
I can remember a fist fight between an instructor of mathematics and a full professor of mathematics. That was a rather dramatic event that resulted subsequently in a lawsuit that went on for several years. Walter Bradfield was on a faculty committee that rendered some decision, and that committee was subsequently sued. And I think that the suit went on for 8 or 9 years. That's a hard question. So
Which one are you on?
Number 9.
Number 9.
All right, number 10, what was my understanding of my place in the future of Stony Brook? Why do I think I was appointed? I was working in a particular area that was,
what was that?
A growing area at that time in engineering. And
what area was it?
Heat transfer.
Heat. Well, you and Tom then were...
We were in the same area.
We were in the same area.
Yeah. Back about 1970, I totally changed fields. I'm now working basically on global warming and climate change.
I see.
What expectations did you have when you came? Well, the expectations were that this was to become a major thriving state university.
Don't let your voice drop.
All right. Yes.
Keep it up.
Yeah.
A major
thriving state university. How have these expectations worked out, both personally and for the institution? I think on the whole, very well. I think Stony Brook has not achieved quite what we had expected of it, but it has come reasonably close. I think personally, I've turned down chaired professorships. It's a very good university to stay here.
Wait a minute. I'm sure that the recorder will not pick up what you're saying. Turned down what kind of professorship?
Chaired professorships. Some very good universities.
I see.
To stay here, so I think personally I feel that the direction of the university has worked out very well as far as I personally am concerned. Were your activities confined to the Stony Brook campus?
Before you answer that one, with whom do you work or have you worked here on the campus? What individuals? Your work with?
All right. At the moment, most of my work is involved with people off campus.
I see.
I'm involved with, I can just go through a brief list.
Yes.
I'm involved with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration's Earth Radiation Budget Experiment.
Earth Radiation Budget Experiment.
And that is a project that started in 1980. And will run through 1993. These involve instruments on 3 satellites and the interpretation of those of that data for research purposes. And this involves a science team that encompasses individuals from 3 countries and from a number of universities.
What are the countries?
The countries are Germany, France, in the United States. The science team for that project is the board of directors for that research effort.
I see.
And I'm also involved in what will be the next phase of that, which has the acronym SERIES.
What kind of series?
The acronym is SERIES.
The acronym is SERIES.
SERIES. It stands for Clouds and the Earth's Radiant Energy System. And this, again, involves a science team from a number of countries and a number of institutions and research laboratories. This is a project that began about 6 months ago and is scheduled to go for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It will either carry me through to retirement or to the grave. And so that's another situation where we work with a large number of people from a large number of institutions.
Where did you get your PhD?
University of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, uh-huh.
And then the final one that involves a large number of individuals also is a Department of Energy project that is an intercomparison of computer models of the global climate system. The emphasis here is understanding global warming as could be induced by the increase of greenhouse gases.
And greenhouse what?
Greenhouse gases.
Gases.
Carbon dioxide.
Right.
And,
I'm thinking of a secretary who hasn't the foggiest notion of what you're talking about, trying to pick this up, you see.
Oh, I see. Sure. But the main thrust here is that this involves 20 people from 7 different countries trying to understand how to mathematically model future climate using a computer. So most of my interactions have been with people off the campus. All right, and that brings us down to question number 13, which were your activities confined to Stony Brook? And certainly not. They've been spread around considerably.
Did you deal at all with the central administration in Albany?
I have never in my slightly more than 28 years here ever had anything to do with the central administration in Albany.
So your connections are within your discipline or within certain...
Within my research disciplines have been, yes.
Essentially NASA and Department of Energy.
Department of Energy.
How about the AEC originally?
Well, that is the Department of Energy. The old Atomic Energy Commission then went through several different permutations and currently is the Department of Energy.
I worked at Brookhaven for 5 years.
Oh.
In the director's office. Okay. What do you feel you have accomplished? This is 14.
Mm-hmm. What do I feel I had accomplished at Stony Brook?
Why not? Let's talk first about the Department of Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days.
All right. Well, you have to bear in mind that my career goes in two segments,
okay,
and that I haven't done any engineering since the late 60s.
I see.
So for the late 60s, I have been doing research and heat transfer that have been funded by the National Science Foundation. And toward the late 60s, I got interested in atmospheric studies, and that's what I've been involved with ever since.
I see. Well, there's some heat transfer implications in what you're doing now.
Well, certainly heat transfer in the atmosphere.
In the atmosphere, yes. How did you get into heat transfer in the first place?
Well, that goes way back to when I was undergraduate.
Really?
That professor was doing research in heat transfer.
I see.
Got me interested in it, and that's what I did my graduate studies in.
Well, Tom came to Raleigh from...
University of Minnesota.
University of Minnesota. And he got into heat transfer...
Well, again, back as a graduate student.
Back as a graduate student.
Right.
Okay. What do you think you have accomplished? Within the department here, you have this institute.
Well, interdepartmental institute, yes.
Interdepartmental institute. When was it set up?
All right, that goes through two stages also. The institute that we have at present is about a year and a half old. The predecessor to that was called the Laboratory for Planetary Atmospheres Research. That was established in 1974. It was simply a device, since people doing atmospheric research on campus are spread in different departments, that was sort of to give us a bit of a home base.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, and certainly with Jerry Schubel's pushing and urging and help, and I would have to call Jerry Schubel one of the important aspects on this campus,
right,
very definitely. That man has more enthusiasm and drive. I think he has a very overactive thyroid.
Well, he puts it to good use. He has a good imagination.
Yes.
For other people's problems than simply the marine sciences.
Right. He was the one that basically urged us to get the Institute of Atmospheric Science to put in a proposal for that institute, which we did do, and it has subsequently been funded.
Do you work at all with Toby on?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, Toby and I have, in the past, published several papers together.
I see. Okay.
Just brought in a very good man whose appointment is in the Institute. He was formerly the director of a large division at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center.
Hmm.
He had 300 people under him.
What was his name?
Marvin Geller. He came here in July.
Uh-huh.
A exceptional individual. And we have two more positions within the Institute, so we are really a growing enterprise. So I think that what is my main accomplishment at Stony Brook, as far as the university is concerned, not personal medals or things like that, but I would say getting atmospheric sciences as a growing enterprise on campus. And the primary thrust of the Institute is toward global change, understanding the greenhouse effect, and I think the timing has been perfect here. This is a very large international issue.
You've had good support then from the federal government?
We have very good support from the federal government.
In recent years?
Yes.
That's right.
We have our... this whole operation here is basically funded by the government secretary. We have our own dedicated computer across the hall.
By a dedicated computer, you mean one that you use only, is that
just
it?
My group, yes.
Right.
We were just awarded last week 2,000 hours for next year, 2,000 hours of supercomputer time. That is a lot of computer time. That is that's on a Department of Energy computer. So we've had very good support from the government.
Is there any parallel to what is developing on Earth to be found anywhere else in the solar system?
Yes and no. There are certain analogs you can draw. People like to point out the fact that use Venus as a greenhouse example, because Venus has a very dense atmosphere composed primarily of carbon dioxide, and the surface temperature of Venus exceeds the melting point of lead. In Fahrenheit, that's 750 centigrade. I'd have to convert that over. About 900 degrees Fahrenheit. And that very high surface temperature is due to the fact that you have this enormous greenhouse atmosphere.
Right. Okay. All right. You've mentioned, under 15, you've mentioned Jerry Schubel. What about people earlier, John Toll?
Well, I think John Toll did a very good job of going to Albany and getting buildings. And that's what you need during the growing phase, certainly, of the university.
Was he responsible primarily for this light engineering building?
Oh, that I have no idea. I don't know who really was responsible for getting these buildings. Other than whoever was responsible didn't get big enough buildings, because we have a real crisis in office space.
Well, it was awfully hard to find people in the central office and individuals among the trustees who had any idea whatsoever of what a large public university would require.
That's right.
We were really starting from scratch. California had had Berkeley for 75 or 100 years before it started to develop the other campuses.
I can never figure out, in the old engineering building, all the office doors had little square windows in them. They were designed for somebody, for an observer to come along and see if you were really in your office. It always sort of reminded me of a prison door with a peephole in it.
Now, get away from your work and department. What about life on the campus? Faculty relations and the quality of students, quality of your associates, faculty?
Well, we have some extremely good faculty, say, in the atmospheric sciences program, exceptional people. Young woman down the hall that we recruited from Harvard a few years ago, and a gentleman just on the other side of the Secretary's office, Sultan Hamid, who was just a first-class scientist.
What's his name?
Sultan Hamid.
Sultan, H-A-M-I-D?
H-A-M-E-E-D.
H-A-M-E-E-D.
We have the faculty are very high quality. Graduate students that we have no problem attracting good quality graduate students. We do see deterioration in the quality of undergraduate students. And I think that's a national problem that goes down to the bottom of the educational process.
Do you feel a need, personally, of a faculty club or any associations with other faculty members than those with whom you do associate?
That is one of the problems on campus. I don't think there is much cross-fertilization. Everybody stays in their own little group. I think it's a shame we don't have a nice faculty club.
Would you use it?
I think I probably would, if it existed.
Yeah, right. With whom do you work in physics? Do you work with anybody in physics?
Oh, well, Bob DeZafra is the person over there, and we have a lot of interactions. We don't work specifically on the same problems.
I see. Do you have any idea why Lee was fired?
If memory serves me correct, we're going back in ancient history.
Yes, that's right.
From what I can dredge out of my memory banks, he fired two deans in one day, and that was in November.
Hostel and Olson?
Olson, I remember. The other one, I don't know.
Alan Austell was Dean of Students.
And I believe he did end up being department chairman at the same time, but I that may be faulty memory. But I remember the two deans, and then there was all sorts of commotion on campus. There were students striking, and then shortly thereafter, Lee was relieved of the presidency.
Do you remember him personally, what kind of a person he was?
Oh, yes. He was my former department chairman at North Carolina State University.
I see.
He was a man who liked to get things done. Some of the things he did at North Carolina State were not legal, but he got them done. He viewed bureaucracy as a challenge.
I'm afraid it still is.
What he did at North Carolina State, there was an old decrepit laboratory that contained lots of old diesel engines, and it was completely worthless to the university, and he sold all the contents of that laboratory to a scrap metal dealer, totally bypassed the university, and then took the funds he got from the scrap metal dealer, which he received as a check to himself, and then opened up a fund within the department to support research by junior faculty members. But of course, if the auditors, state auditors, have ever learned about that, it would have been a price to pay.
Right.
Doing a shenanigan of that sort.
Okay. Did you have any dealings with anybody else on the campus in the administration? Somebody like Alec Pond, for instance?
Oh, only once, really. And I had to get a proposal in on that particular day. The budget had been changed, so the cover sheet had to be changed to reflect a new dollar amount. The only two people on campus who were authorized to sign off a proposal at that time were John Toll and Bob Schneider, and they were both out of town. And Alec Pond, I think himself or his secretary, used Snowpake to change the budget, the front sheet that still had Toll's or Schneider's signature on it. And that way we were, again, that was not totally legal, but it was a way of getting a proposal out. And
yeah.
Simply something had to be done. That was the only direct contact that anyone had with him.
Were your students in the early days reasonably good as undergraduates?
Yes, I think we had some very good undergraduates.
Have they gone on in science?
Oh, I can think of one that is now a very well-known scientist in atmospheric sciences.
What's his name?
Rich Rotuno.
Rich?
Richard Rotuno.
R-O-T-U?
R-O-T-U-N-O.
N-O. You know where he is?
He's at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Yeah.
He received his undergraduate degree here. He was one of these late bloomers. Very poor grades, he got his senior year. But he did very well after that. He got his master's.
You remember anything about the early days that I haven't asked you about?
Oh.
Now you've mentioned the development of the logo.
You might want to touch base with Tom Irvine. What I'm telling you, really, I got from Irvine. I think he must have passed it on to whoever was doing the design.
Yeah.
Early days, they were hectic.
What?
They were hectic. I can remember commuting into Oyster Bay. We had five of us bought an old Buick as a commuter car, and I was the last one down the line, so it always ended up in my driveway.
You lived out here and commuted back there?
To Oyster Bay, but he lived in Port Jefferson then.
I see.
And reverse gear had long gone in this car, so you could never back it up. And unfortunately, there was a slope to my driveway, so I would bring it in the evening. The next morning, I would just let it roll out of the driveway. But we had to be very careful never to park in any place where you had to back up. Getting squared away at on the campus here was, everything was just hectic those first few years.
Right.
Trying to get library acquisitions, that was a big thing, you know. We moved into a campus that did not have an active library.
That's right.
And we were always going for interlibrary loan, you needed an article. And, but I think the people in the library in those days did an excellent job of ordering journals as fast as they could, getting back copies of journals and bringing things up to speed as rapidly as possible.
And with Donald Cook and Reuben Welch?
Reuben Welch, yes.
Reuben Welch particularly?
Right.
Anybody else you remember?
There was someone else who was very good, whose name has slipped now. He was, he had once worked for the United Nations, that's all I can remember.
Wasn't Gerhard Vasco?
I don't know.
Yes.
And then he came to Stony Brook and then he left.
Money was relatively free in the beginning.
In the beginning, oh yes, up until the early 70s. Yes, there was ample travel money, money for research projects, yes. And then the crunch of the 70s occurred.
And I think after Rockefeller, the governors, they got into economic trouble, so it's free to cut education.
That seemed to be the case,
right?
And it all, yeah.
Right. Do you have any connection with the Atmospheric Center upstate?
Very little, because we do totally different things.
Different things.
Absolutely different things, yes.
What are they doing?
Their emphasis is to a large part on what's called synoptic meteorology, weather forecasting. They have a big effort on that. They have an effort on things like fog dispersion, doing research on how to get rid of fog over airports. They are heavily involved with atmospheric electricity. And some cloud microphysical studies. Our efforts here are more in atmospheric radio transfer,
radio transfer?
Radiation transfer.
Radiation.
Climate studies, strongly involved in climate studies, ozone depletion, and...
That's the Zafiros field.
The Zafiros field, right.
Well, I think that's about it. I don't think I had any occasion to deal with you people, really. When I was running the place, Tom was the one at that time.